few days ago, I was listening to a podcast, a guy that I have a lot of confidence in politically. And one of the things that he is constantly talking about, he's talking about the Lord, which I like. And I'm talking about this guy's like got millions and millions of followers. He has one of the largest youth organizations in the country. And he is probably the main reason that young people went for Donald Trump the way that they did in the last election. And he makes no bones about it that he is a believer in Christ. The guy's name is Charlie Kirk. Some of you have heard his name. He's on the radio, he's on podcast, and so I listen to his podcast from time to time. One of the things that he always talks about is keeping the Sabbath. And every time I hear him say that, I'm thinking, I hope you don't confuse people. Keeping the Sabbath is something that has been around for a long time as far as Judaism is concerned. It's been around in Christianity even because of the roots of Judaism. It kind of went by the wayside for a little bit, but it seemed to be rearing its head again, and so that's why I'm just going to talk a little bit about Saturday worship today or tonight. People that worship on Saturday, not all of them, but a great number of them, are cult. They're part of a cult. Seventh-day Adventist. I know that that's not a popular stand to take. I know that Ben Carson, who is a fine gentleman, is a Seventh-day Adventist. But it's still a cult. You know, Dale Murphy was a Mormon, but it's still a Mormon. And so around the world, people that worship on Saturday, that is called Sabbatarianism. That's a big word, which simply means Saturday worship. And now, evangelicals, we do have services sometime on Saturday. We may have a men's meeting, we may have a ladies' meeting. One of the things that you will notice in some of the modern contemporary type churches, especially during Easter and Christmas, you'll notice that they have multiple services. And those multiple services extend to Saturday and even into Friday, but they don't do it as a regular day of worship. They do it for convenience. The whole reason for people having multiple services is not because they have so many people that they need that. They do it for convenience. They want the convenience so that people will go, well, I've got to soothe my conscience, and so I can go at 8:30, but I can't go at 11. Or I can go Saturday, and I can go fishing on Sunday. And so it's a convenient type thing. And every tub sits on its own bottom. If that's what they want to do, that's fine. But let's not ever get in our mind that Saturday is the day that Christians traditionally have worshiped. That is not the regular day. That is the day that the Jews would worship. In Judaism to this day, if they're Orthodox Jews, they worship on Saturday. And so this evening, what I want us to do is I just want us to just walk through a few verses. If we get through quick, that's fine. And if we don't, that'll be okay too. And so I want you to go with me. First of all, I want you to go to Exodus 20, verse 11. In Exodus 20, verse 11, I want you to read this with me. And basically, what we see is that it says, "For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, the sea and all that is in them is, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it," or made it a holy day, right? Now, That is a verse that Sabbatarians go to and they say, well, because God rested on the seventh day. Let me just say that God wasn't tired. God was not tired out. He wasn't tuckered out like I am. He doesn't get tired. He is all powerful, and he rested simply as an example that sometimes we need rest. Now, one of the things that I want you to remember is that from the time that he had creation, all the way until the time of Moses, that's a good while. That's not quite 3,500 years. From the time of creation to the time of Moses, there is never a time when the Sabbath is mentioned. It's only when you get to Moses that the Sabbath is mentioned. So what does that mean? Well, I want you to go with me and go with me to Exodus 31, verse 16 and 17. And I want us to look at that verse. Wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath. Are you the children of Israel? No, you're not. So the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant. And so when we read verse 17, it says, it is a sign between me and the church. No, it doesn't say that. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. And so you have the covenant that God made. He made it as an example of what happened at creation, but it was for himself and the nation of Israel. Now, you and I, we need to remember that Deuteronomy is what is called a second telling. You say, what do you mean by that? Well, how many people sing in a duet? Two, all right? When you think of a duo, Batman and Robin, the dynamic duo, two. Well, Deuteronomy is a second telling. What that means is that means that when Moses is writing Deuteronomy, and that's the last book that he writes, he simply is taking some of the highlights from the previous books, and he is second telling it, a retelling of what he has previously said. So I want you to think with me about that as we go to Deuteronomy, and I want us to begin in verse 12, and we'll ultimately go through verse 15. Deuteronomy chapter 5, keep the Sabbath day to sanctify it or set it apart, as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee. Now remember, we're talking to the children of Israel. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou nor thy son, nor thy daughter, nor thy manservant, nor thy maidservant, nor thine ox, nor thine ass, nor any of thy cattle, nor the stranger that is within thy gates, that thy master or manservant and thy maidservant may rest as well as thou. So in other words, everybody gets a day off. I think that's good. Here at the church, we give people days off. We have Amala takes Mondays off. Abby, she's in school, so she gets Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday off. Brother Rick, he's off on Friday. I take off whatever day I can take off that week. Stephen does the same thing. Chad, he's part-time. He does what he wants. As long as he gets his work done, I'm good with that. And so you've got rest that's always needed. And so here you've got him telling the people, everybody needs a day of rest. Now, one of the things that is very appealing is the people that practice setting a day aside, such as Charlie does, is that they don't turn their cell phones on. They don't turn their computers on. They don't do social media. All I'm thinking is, if we had a day where young people didn't do social media, they would go into withdrawals. I mean, it'd be like a drunk with the DTs. I mean, that's how bad it would be. And so you've got these people, and they are resting. They're at home with their families. They're playing with their kids. They're eating as a family. All of those are good things, absolutely wonderful things. Well, they have learned that from what the Hebrews have done and what the Orthodox still do. But I don't want them to really keep pushing that envelope, because if they do, next thing you know, they'll be skipping church on Sunday and doing something supposedly religious on Saturday. And so I want you to know this, that in the book of Acts, you have the Sabbath day that is mentioned many, many times. Now, why would the Sabbath day be mentioned? Well, because the early church was predominantly Jewish. The church that was founded in Jerusalem was empowered on the day of Pentecost. It was predominantly Jewish people. Well, if you've been doing something your whole life, it's kind of tough not to have parts of that that want to follow you into whatever else you're doing. I mean, if you've done something in your whole life as a kid, when you set up your own home and you have your own house and the way that you do things, you're probably going to do things the way that you were taught as a kid. You girls will do what your mama did, and you daddies will probably do what your daddy did. Or you guys will do what your daddy did. And so we've got the Sabbath that is mentioned often through the book of Acts, because it's got a lot of Jewish flavor, especially in the early chapters. You read about the Sabbath from, I think it's chapter 13 through chapter 18. Reason is because Paul was trying to reach the Jewish people. Do you remember what he wrote in Romans chapter 1? In Romans chapter 1, he said, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. So in other words, he was still, even though he was an apostle to the Gentiles, he still cared deeply about the Jewish people. That's understandable. They were his kinsmen after the flesh. He was willing to do anything to win someone to Christ. I want you to go with me to 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 20. 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 20. And I want you to see how Paul approached his soul winning. And unto the Jews I became as a Jew. What does that mean? That means that he went to synagogue on the Sabbath day because he wanted to try to build a relationship with those folks so that he could tell them about Jesus. And so he says, unto the Jews I became as a Jew. Now, in the book of Acts, there is a story where Paul takes vows. He goes to Jerusalem to fulfill those vows. Why does he do that? Because he's trying to reach the Jewish people. He says, that I might gain the Jews to them that are under the law. In other words, he was subjecting himself to be a Sabbatarian for a day, that he might gain them that are Sabbatarians. Those that were under the Mosaic law, he was willing to make himself subservient and submit to be like them, do like them. Why is that? So he could reach them. When Hudson Taylor went to mainland China, One of the first things that he did, according to his own testimony, was he began to wear the clothes of, to use his term, and I don't know if this is politically correct or not, but he says, I changed into the, like the garments of a Chinaman. That sounds like I ought not say that. A Chinaman. He grew his hair out and kind of like Hop Sing on Bonanza and would have a little ponytail in the back, because that's how the men in China dressed, and that was the way that they looked. He wanted to be able to have a relationship with them, and so he kind of became like them in the dress. Now, he did not participate in their paganism. He did not participate in their Buddhism or the Hinduism, but he was willing to go a certain distance, and instead of dressing as an Englishman, he dressed as a Chinaman. Paul is willing to become subservient to certain things so that he can reach the Jewish people. We won't take time to go farther, but if you read 21 and 22, he also talks about reaching other people that are not Jewish. Matter of fact, just go to it. Go to 21 and 22, all right? To them that are without law, in other words, people that are not Jewish, being not without law to God, but under the law of Christ, that I might gain them that are without the law. Verse 22, to the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I have made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. So in other words, his whole motivation for doing what he has done has been to win somebody to the Lord. And when it came to him committing vows, he did that, not that he had to, not that he was under a bondage to. He did that so that he could reach somebody that was of Jewish heritage. And so, I want you to remember this. The last time that the Sabbath is mentioned is in Acts 18, verse 6. Let's go there. Acts 18:6. And when they opposed themselves and blasphemed, he shook his raiment. And he said unto them, your blood be upon your own heads. I am clean. From henceforth I will go unto the Gentiles. Until you get to this verse from chapter 13 through chapter 18, he is always going into the synagogues. That's his MO. When he goes to town, he finds a synagogue, or if they've got more than one, he goes into multiple synagogues. But after this verse, you find him where that he shakes his raiment. It's kind of like Jesus said that if you go into a town and they will not listen, what do? You shake the dust off your sandals and leave them alone. And so you don't find the Sabbath being honored after this verse right here. And so you find that the Apostle Paul tried to win the Jews. He tried to conform to as much as he could. But finally, he just said, I'm going to the Gentiles. So the Jewish Sabbath, along with all of the Mosaic law, stopped in Colossians 2. I want you to read Colossians 2:14, and we're also going to read 16. So I want us to, there's 2 points tonight. Saturday, that's the first point, we're about done with that. Blotting out the handwriting of ordinances. What were the ordinances? The Mosaic Law's ordinances, the things that were 613 of those rules. Blotting out the handwriting of ordinances that was against us, which was contrary to us, and took it out of the way, nailing it to his cross. So in other words, everything that the people that worshiped on Saturday thought was going to give them righteousness, that was all nailed to the cross. So Saturday was something that they did. Now, why did it make a comeback? Well, I'm really saddened to tell you, but it's because of a Baptist preacher. It was a Baptist preacher named William Miller. William Miller was a preacher in the 1800s, the middle of the 1800s. And he just kind of had it in his mind that if it was good enough for the Jews in the Old Testament, then we ought to do it ourselves. And so he became a worshiper on the Sabbath. So he was a Sabbatarian, to use a more modern term. They didn't use that term in 1800s. He was just simply somebody that worshiped on the Sabbath day. And he was also very big into eschatology. I'm talking about, this guy was so big into eschatology that he would set dates. I mean, it was going to be on October this in this year. Well, the problem is he had all of these things worked out in his head. And when that day came, all of his followers, and he had a good number of followers, all of those followers had dressed in white robes. They were clean. They were standing there, and they're waiting all day long for Jesus to come, and he don't show up. Well, all they had to do is read their Bible and say that no man knows the day or the hour. When you get somebody that begins to want to give you, you know, the days, the weeks that Jesus is coming, there ought to be bells and whistles dinging in your head. It's not happening. So William Miller, after he failed the first time, he said, I miscalculated. He recalculated, and it was going to be the next year. The next year came. Some of the followers had fallen away, but some of them, they were hanging in there with him because, I mean, after all, everybody makes mistakes. That day came and passed. Jesus didn't come. He got so disheartened. He didn't quit the ministry, but he quit publicizing and writing publicly and just kind of kept to himself. And he was really kind of a recluse. And before the end of his life, he kind of turned his back on that stuff. But something happened. What was that? Some of his writings got picked up by other folks. And because those writings made such sense to them and they liked it so much because it was kind of new and sensational, they began what we know as the Seventh-day Adventist. And so that's where that came from. But the beliefs and all of that stuff ultimately began with a Baptist preacher named William Miller. And his people were called Millerites. And so you have these people that worship on Saturday, and there's people that really, really, they're sincere, not understanding that Colossians tells us that all of that stuff was nailed to the cross. We don't have to keep that anymore. You can eat as much country ham as you want. If you want to eat some shrimp, you can have some shrimp. You can eat a rabbit if you want to. You don't have to be under the law. That's Saturday. So, what about Sunday? Well, one of the criticisms that you hear from Sabbatarians, oh, it was not Sunday. It was only in 321 AD that Constantine, who was the emperor, declared it to be the day that we would worship. Well, some people even go so far as to say, well, he got the permission from the Pope. Problem was, there wasn't a Pope at that time. There was a bishop at that time, and ultimately that office kind of morphed into the papacy, but the Catholic Church had not really even begun until after Constantine had delivered this edict. So what does the edict say? It says this: on the venerable day of the sun, S-U-N, let the magistrates and the people residing in cities rest. Let all the workshops be closed. This is from a book by Philip Schaff, who is a well-known author. This one is called The History of the Christian Church. Now, he didn't get permission from the papacy for this. He made that edict because he himself was the emperor. And so you have that. That is one of the reasons that they give for Sunday worship. That's not it. I want you to go with me to the Gospel of John, chapter 20. And these are some examples of Sunday worship. Now, we're not going to take time to go through the Gospels. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, all four of the Gospels, talk about Jesus and his resurrection, and they say on the first day of the week. There's eight references, I think, to the first day of the week in the New Testament. We're not going to go through those. Well, yes, we are. We're going to 21 there. Okay. John 20, 1, first day of the week, cometh Mary Magdalene early, when it was yet dark, unto the sepulcher, seeth the stone taken away from the sepulcher. And so, now, what I want you to see, though, is verse 19 of John 20. The same day at evening, being the first day of the week. Now, we know the first day of the week is Sunday, all right? When the doors were shut, where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews. You remember what I preached this morning about, let not your heart be troubled. Don't be anxious. They are assembled together. They're quiet. Why is that? Because they don't want to be crucified themselves. Their Lord has been crucified. They don't know he's resurrected yet. All of them don't. They've heard rumors. The ladies have told some of the guys, but they've not seen him yet. And so as they are there in that upper room, Jesus came, stood in the midst, and said unto them, peace be unto you. So you've got this instance where that early group, I like to think that it's the early church. You say, why do you like to think that? I just like the church. Now, my little Tommyology that I've given you before, Matthew 16, I will build my church. That's future. I will build. But you go two chapters over when he says that if anybody doesn't listen, when you go to him privately and you take somebody with him, what do? You take him before the church. You got to have a church before you can take it before him. That's just logic. I think that's why I say that the church at Pentecost was empowered that day. I don't believe it began that day. I think the organizational structure was in place. Now, feel free to disagree. You can always be wrong. All right? You say, yeah, but 99% of everybody else, I know, I'm just weird. So, you've got this passage in John 20:19. Thomas is not there. Go to verse 26. Same chapter, verse 26. 1 week has passed. After 8 days, again, his disciples were within. Within what? Within that upper room. So they're back in that upper room. As far as I know, they were in that upper room four times. They were there at the Last Supper. They were there the first Sunday night of the resurrection, the second Sunday night of the resurrection, and they were there assembled waiting on Pentecost. Those are the four times that I know about being in the upper room. Now, I'm going to just tell you this right up front. One of the things that they like to do is they like to take you to, quote-unquote, the upper room in Israel. I walked for an hour and a half to get to the upper room in Israel. You know what the upper room is? It's not there. There's something else built there, and they go, but it was in this spot. And I'm thinking, I walked an hour and a half for this spot? Well, that's what they did here. They had a room at that time. And so we see that they met on Sunday, and it was a Sunday evening both times. So you're in good standing tonight. I want you to look with me at 1 Corinthians 16:2. I used this verse this morning in Sunday school. Upon the first day of the week, that's Sunday, let every one of you lay by him in store as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. Now what he's doing is this. He is telling the church at Corinth, I need you to begin to collect offerings, have it at the church, because we're going to take this money along with the offerings from churches that are in Macedonia, people like Philippi, people like Berea, people like Thessalonica. All of those are going to be giving money as well. We'll get a big pot together and we're going to take it back to help our Jewish brethren and sistren there in Jerusalem. They're starving to death. We got to help them. And so they're doing that on the first day of the week. One of the things that's a blessing to me, we have out in the foyer, we have what we call the chest of Joash. You say, why do you call it that? Because in the Old Testament, King Joash had a chest. People put money in it to raise money for the house of God. All right? And so we just take that Old Testament thing. We try to kind of handcuff ourselves to it so that everybody knows that this is like to help the Lord's work. All right? So we call it the chest of Joash. So it's on the first day of the week, and what I love seeing is when we have people just one by one, they just kind of walk over, they drop an envelope in, drop an envelope in, drop an envelope in. Now, the majority of our people probably give online. I know Debbie and I give online. We pay our tithes and offerings online, and we give our mission online. But I like seeing that chest of Joash be, you know, active. I like seeing that. And so you've got the first day of the week, and that's when they were going to church. So that's when they were giving their offerings to try to help this other church in Jerusalem. One final scripture, and I'll be done. Acts 20. Acts chapter 20, and we'll begin in verse 7. I can identify with this. You'll recognize what part I'm identifying with when we read it. Upon the first day of the week, there's that phrase again, which is Sunday, when the disciples came together to break bread. So in other words, they probably had the Lord's table and then they had some fellowship. Paul preached unto them, ready to depart on the morrow. So in other words, in the morning, he was going to be leaving them. And continued his speech until midnight. That's what you're thinking about me, right? Verse 8. And there were many lights in the upper chamber. Now that doesn't mean that they had lights like we have. That meant that they had olive oil lamps. They had wicks in them. And so there's many of the candles or the oil lamps that are in the upper chamber, which is upstairs, where they were gathered together. You say, well, why would they be in an upstairs? Because a lot of times in those days, they had the animals that slept in the bottom. They would sleep above the animals, but they had the animals have a place where that they could get out of the elements as well. So they're gathered together. Verse 9. And there sat in the window a certain young man named Eutychus, being fallen into a deep sleep. Any young people asleep? Okay. A deep sleep. And as Paul was long preaching, there, I promise you, as the Lord is my witness, I try to preach short messages. I had all intentions of doing that tonight. And it just don't happen. I try. My wife said, quit studying. I said, you can't do that and be a pastor. You got to have something to say. She was like, but you're never short. And I'm like, I don't have that ability. He was long preaching, and this kid Eutychus is asleep. He sunk down with sleep. Now, that's not an uncommon thing. We used to have a fellow that sit about two rows in front of where Brother Johnny's at tonight, and he chewed gum. And he would sit there and he'd be going. And he'd be chewing that gum. But his eyes would be closed. And all I'm thinking is, man, he is multitasking. He is sleeping and chewing at the same time. That's what I'm thinking. And so he has sunk down with sleep and fell down from the third loft and was taken up dead. So he has fallen three stories up. He's up there where those flickering lights, where Paul is preaching. Now, was he a dynamic preacher? Who knows? He could have been monotone. One of the greatest messages, a message that was ever preached on American soil, was read by a candlelight, Jonathan Edwards. He preached Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God just by reading it, because he had written it out longhand. And grown men were holding on to the pillars in the church because they were afraid that they were going to fall bodily into hell. And so this boy fell out of the third floor and was taken up dead. Verse 10. And Paul went down and fell on him. That don't mean he tripped. That means that he simply laid across him, much like those Old Testament prophets Elijah and Elisha did when they raised people from the dead, and embraced him. And he said, trouble not yourselves, for his life is in him. And so he has this young man, whether he was dead or whether he was not, I don't know. I personally think that he was dead. But here he says, don't be anxious, don't be troubled. Life is in him. Verse 11. When he therefore was come up again, that's Paul, and had broken bread and eaten and talked a long while, even till the break of day, so he departed. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I wouldn't even have thought about going back and finishing the sermon. Years ago, Dr. Hodges, who was the pastor that I was saved under, he was preaching one day, and I wasn't there. He told me about it. I'd gone down to visit, and he said, come on, I want you to go with me for a little bit. So he put me in his car, took me over, and showed me his house that he was building. And we were talking, and he said, well, did you hear I fell off the platform? And I said, I did not hear that story. Well, the platform at Bible Baptist in Savannah at that time, from the floor, it was that high. Then it had a little mourner's bench that was just, you know, normal height. But the thing was like almost 6 foot off the ground. And he got to waxing eloquent one day, and he went, and when he did that, he stepped right off of that thing and down he went. Boom, he hit. I said, Doc, were you okay? Yeah, I was all right. I said, well, did you get up and preach? He said, no. He said, they done saw me fall. Everybody was gasping, wanting to know if I was all right. I done lost the spirit of the moment. He said, I just said, let's pray, and we went home. And all I'm thinking is, here he is. He has just had to stop preaching because a kid fell out a window. He had to go down, raise the kid up, make sure everybody knew the kid was okay. They go back up, they eat a little bit, and he says, hey, we're already here, we're already excited, I'll just preach till dawn. So he departs. And then verse number 12, I think, is the last one. And they brought the young man alive and were not a little comforted. In other words, that's an old English way of saying they were comforted a lot because the kid didn't die. Example after example of the church meeting on the first day of the week. And so that is the example that we have used now for 2,000 years. And so when somebody says, well, what's the Lord's Day? I call Sunday the Lord's Day. Now, I know that Jesus is the Lord of every day. He is the Lord of the Sabbath, but he's also the Lord of Sunday through Friday. I know that he can be Lord every day and is Lord every day. But I think that when we are thinking about worshiping as a congregation, I don't think necessarily that we would do it consistently on a Thursday, because there's no biblical example of them doing it on a Thursday. We Baptists are supposed to be people of the book. And if we're people of the book, then let's be people of the book. And so we don't worship on Saturday. We worship on Sunday, because that's what that early church did, and it wasn't because of Constantine.